The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Well, now it's time for our Friday Forum, and joining me to look back on the main stories of the week, Robert Troy, Fianna Fáil TD, Minister of State for Financial Services, Credit Unions and Insurance, Ona Brin, Sinn Féin TD and spokesperson on Housing, Local Government and Heritage, and Dr. Jennifer Kavanagh, Law Lecturer at the South East Technological University, and of course the author of a really important book on constitutional law.
Yes.
And it is your wisdom we will be calling upon shortly as we talk about the presidential campaigns and what lies ahead. So, Robert Troy, Bertie's out.
So we're reading the papers this morning, yes?
Oh, is that how you get your news? I'm delighted to hear it.
Well, I honestly never thought he was really in, to be frank. And
he obviously thought he was.
Well, he obviously did, but I didn't. And especially when Jim Gavin's name came into the field, I thought... he was a very strong candidate, very strong contender, and in my opinion, we'll probably get the party nomination next Tuesday, not to preempt a secret ballot, but based on the conversations I'm having with my colleagues, he seems to be the favourite to come forward next Tuesday. But as I said, I don't want to preempt.
Now, those conversations, I mean, we know the famous conversation between Bertie Ahern and Albert Reynolds at the time of the vote, which brought Mary McAleese into the frame. It appears Bertie actually showed Albert his ballot, indicating that he was voting for Bertie, or that Bertie was voting for Albert, and it never happened.
Yeah, and I suppose as someone who represents Longford Westmeath, there's still a deep feeling about that in the Longford part of the constituency. They felt that Albert was shafted back in 1997, but at
the
time...
Is this the party getting its revenge on Bertie?
Well, I think at the time... Bertie felt that Mary McAleese probably was a better candidate to win the presidency, and she went on to win the presidency and went on to be a very good president for 14 years.
Surprised, though, that a man like your Taoiseach, a stalwart Cork man, should be backing the former manager of the Dublin team to take on Billy Kelleher?
Well, I think he's much more...
Cork man.
I think he's much more than the manager of the Dublin football team. He has a very distinguished career in aviation, a distinguished career in serving internationally in peacekeeping. He has worked as chair of Citizens Assembly in a voluntary capacity, and of course the work that he's doing in terms of the inner city Dublin Task Force. So he has much more to offer than just being one of the best football managers of all time. And I think as people get to know him, if he comes through the selection convention next Tuesday evening, people will get to see that and will realise that he would be a very good president for Ireland.
Do you think his job should be kept open for 7 years?
Well, I think if it's a thing if it was the case that any other position would be kept open, then it should be. But if it's uniquely being kept open just for him, no. So it depends what the terms of reference are for the employment. If somebody else could take a career break for a period of time to go and do something else and their job would be kept open in the IAA, well, then that's fair enough. If not, then it wouldn't be fair.
Ona Brin, what do you think?
Well, ultimately, that's an industrial relations matter for Jim and his employer. Obviously, it depends on his terms of contract and terms and conditions, etc.
It is a state job, you see.
It is, but we also have to remember when somebody is employed in professional capacity, they sign a contract, they have terms and conditions, and look, they have to be respected. I also think it's a side issue. Obviously, this is an important contest. As you know, we'll be making our decision whether to stand our own candidate or support Catherine Connolly at the Ardcorla on the 20th of this month. For me, I suppose the presidential election, well, obviously it's a symbolic role. It's also a very important role in terms of how the president chooses to represent the values of the country, how they speak on important matters of the day, as well as how they represent the country domestically and internationally. So I think that's what the debate needs to focus on.
Do you you have an open mind, it would appear, in Sinn Féin about Catherine Connolly versus your own candidate. But looking at what that candidate would represent, and not, without rehearsing everything about Catherine Connolly, there are a few little blemishes on her CV, shall we say. Some of the companies she kept in, whether it's in Syria or Moscow.
Yeah, although I think in fairness to Catherine, she's dealt with the Syria stuff in the last week or two. Look, I sit in the Dáil Chamber and like most Oireachtas members, I hear far more of the daily contributions of members than members of the public do. Catherine has an incredibly strong record on social justice, on human rights, on housing, I have to say, on issues affecting women and children, on neutrality, on Gaza. At the same time, the party also has to consider, do we want to support as part of our work with the broad progressive left in the Oireachtas, Catherine as the representative of that, or do we want to make sure that there's a strong Sinn Féin voice in the contest?
And what's your own feeling?
I have a very strong view on it, but I'm not going to tell you because I'm keeping that within the internal party process. I'll share it with you when we've made our decision at the Ardcorl on the 20th. But in fairness, I think one of the things Mary Lou did this time around, which was very positive, is we opened up a very extensive consultation with the party membership. A report from that was brought to the Ardcorl at our meeting in July. The party membership have a variety of views. It's kind of interesting.
Okay, but we know that Mary Lou has been talked of and she equivocated herself about it. But, you know, I'm thinking from her point of view, if she loses to a Jim Gavin or whoever else, she's damaged. But someone like yourself, ever the bridesmaid in housing, never the bride, would you not think of throwing your hat in the ring?
Absolutely not.
Because you've got a very high profile. Housing is the subject du jour for a particular generation. Attractive proposition for you. And you'd solve your own housing problem instantly.
Absolutely not. First of all, I'm very adequately housed in my private rental in Clondalkin Village. If you want to affect change in housing, you affect it by being the Minister for Housing in a government of change, and that's what I want to do. But crucially, look, the party is going to make our decision on the 20th in advance of the close of nominations. Everybody will know where we stand following that. And whichever decision we take, we're going to play a very active part in this presidential campaign because it's an important campaign and it's important we get the right person. I think Michael D. Higgins has done an exceptional job. I do have to say Mary McAleese was a very, very good president. And I want to make sure that the next president of the state is able to make the same very positive and progressive contribution. And I don't believe either a Fianna Fáil member or a Fine Gael member with all of the baggage that that carries would be able to do that. And that's why I want to support
Jennifer,
a strong progressive
candidate. First of all, the field is getting wider and wider by the day, although, you know, not everyone has a clear path, shall we say, to a nomination.
Correct. There's actually a GIF going around at the moment from I Am Spartacus, where instead of standing up saying I am Spartacus, I am a presidential candidate. It's getting that wide. I think Owen has just qualified himself for running because he actually understands the constitutional mandate, as in if you want to run for the presidency on a platform, that is not the role of the presidency. The role of the presidency is to represent, to be that person who is overarching the separation of powers, signing off the legislation, appointing the ministers. If you want to run to do X, Y and Z, that's not going to happen unless you make a list of all the different bodies that are working in that area and making sure you're attending the opening of every packet of crisps that they have to give the profile to it. So I personally think we should have as wide a field as we can. I do think it would be a very much a negative thing if, say, a parliamentary party has used their Oireachtas mandate to nominate candidates, but then are telling their councillors, don't be nominating anyone because there are different pathways and it should be open. And all
you
those
mean
candidates,
it is inappropriate that councillors should be whipped?
Inappropriate would be the word you would use, but I would say it's not within the spirit of what is there in the constitution to have a pathway blocked by other people who've used their Oireachtas pathway. That's a concern that I would have. Now, the people who will go before the various councils, I believe there's a wheelbarrow going for a nomination in Kerry, Barry,
one handle
Ray
on the left and one handle
absolutely
on the right.
It can and it did previously turn into a bit of a circus, but it is there for people to seek that nomination.
But isn't that the filter that you've got to
exactly
get? You've got to get a nomination, no matter whether you're the mad raving loony party or whatever it is.
Absolutely,
because
you're
entitled
locals
to have a go,
exactly,
but the filters should keep you out.
Exactly, because for the local elections, you need a small number of people to sign a nomination form or you put in your deposit. The same for the Dáil elections. We can't have a system that runs like that where you just get people signing up the assenter form because the ballot paper could be as long as a furlong. That is the problem you would have. So there has to be limitations on it. Anyone who's already criticising that obviously has not read the Constitution. There's a number of people who've been putting up things about the Constitution and they fail to read the context of the other sentences that go around that section to understand it. So for me, the main thing is that the people who are running for it know what the Constitution says and can put out a pathway and a prospectus to the voting public of this is why you should vote for me within what is possible to be done within the role of the office.
So just explain for those who have been on Planet Zog for the last while exactly how the councils can nominate somebody.
So the councils, you need four councils to nominate. Once they have nominated, they can't nominate anyone else. Bear in mind that the number of councils has changed. It has been in flux since 1937 when it came in. So pre-crash, we had a lot more councils than what we have now. So, for example, Limerick, Waterford City Council, they all got merged together. So it is going before them with their meetings. Obviously, you have to get councillors to put you on the agenda, but it's going in, selling your message. And then, say, if Waterford City and County Council decides to back a particular candidate, they don't get to back anyone else. So,
okay, so mathematically, how many independents could we have?
Off the top of my head, I do have an article coming out in the Law magazine with Claris Press where I actually have the actual number where I've worked it out properly. It's around, when you put the Oireachtas pathway and the local council pathway together, you're kind of looking at about between 15 and 20 maximum.
Ooh, that's a lot.
It is a lot, but it's not a Wicklow ballot paper where they had to use two columns and got two pairs of number ones and two pairs of number twos.
Okay. Owen, what is your view of the, shall we say, alternative candidates? I mean, do you welcome the cut and thrust of such a campaign? I mean, often we in the media would like it enlivened, shall we say, by character.
Or
characters.
Cattle prod.
Yeah, although I suppose one of the concerns I have about recent presidential campaigns is they've become very kind of personality focused, and some of the focus of the campaigns has become kind of unusually kind of vicious for Irish elections. Like I've spent a time living in England, and oftentimes some of the coverage and reporting and commentary around elections there isn't about the politics, isn't about the policy, isn't about...
It gets gamified.
It gets very nasty. And a couple of the campaigns in recent years have been like that. You've seen some of the, for example, independent candidates or NGO candidates afterwards kind of reflecting, kind of saying, if I'd known it was going to be like that, they wouldn't have done it. So whatever the number of candidates, and Harry McGee had a piece in the Irish Times yesterday where he was actually kind of showing, you know, 6, 7, 8 has been the kind of number of candidates over the last number of elections. And in some, of course, because it has been uncontested, we've had none. For me, I want this to be about the values. I want this to be about the roles and function of the president. And while, yes, the president, whoever he or she may be, doesn't have the ability to introduce legislation or craft policy, I do think there's an important role for the president to be a voice. And it's a very fine line. And there's always a debate if somebody feels the president has gone over that line. But Mary Robinson, Mary McAleese and Michael D. Higgins, I think, have found very appropriate ways of pushing out the boundaries in positive, constructive manners in terms of building the peace process in Ireland, North and South, in terms of advocating around key human rights issues or international issues. And therefore, I'd like to see the debate around the issues and obviously within the constitutional remit of the presidency, rather about kind of more tabloid
personality
issues.
Yeah, but I mean, you can be
issues.
In favour of mum and apple pie, but you can't do anything about mum and apple pie. You know, that,
no,
that's
but the president,
the
but can
party.
I say this? But
Unless you host them at the garden
no, but,
party.
But can I say this? The president has a voice. And for example, if you look at the role Mary Robinson, for example, or Mary McAleese played in the context of the peace process, they used that exceptionally well to help advance. So sure, they didn't have legislative power. They didn't have hard power. But they were able to help frame debates. They were able to help reach out and engage. That's a very powerful soft power. And I think, obviously, again, there's a debate about where the limits of that should or shouldn't be. And
it's more the nudge effect.
I think that is important.
Independence coming in and making a fairly crowded field. How do you feel?
Well, I think it's good to have competition. And even looking at it from our own party's perspective of two people contesting to run, two very fine candidates contesting to run, it's always good to have healthy competition, because during a competition you have debate.
So you think it might have been better for Sean Kelly to be humiliated by Heather Humphreys?
You have an opportunity. You have an opportunity for a respective candidate to go before a council or a parliamentary party and to make their case and to state out clearly what their intention is, how they see the presidency going forward. And it's just interesting to note that Owen said, you know, it would be bad to have a Fianna Fáil or Fine Gael president. Most presidents are above party politics. And in the same breath, he acknowledged that a party nominee of ours, the Fianna Fáil nominee back in Mary McAleese, was a very fine candidate. So,
crucially, she wasn't a member of Fianna Fáil, and she was quite independent. Jim Gavin is joining your party and therefore endorsing all of the policies that your party is responsible for, including record homelessness, housing crisis, a healthcare crisis. Okay. Jim is signing up to that. Mary McAleese didn't.
This is the problem with the presidential debates. because you politify an office that should be above politics.
And that's the point.
And one of our texters saying, party politics should have no part in the presidency. I will only vote for an independent candidate, says one. Above all, our president should come across as presidential, meaning that that person has natural presence or gravitas or character in the way he or she carries himself or herself and speaks. That's from Greg in Sutton. But I want to move on. We'll be talking about the presidential politics for the next 8 weeks or so. But in the meantime, of course, the ongoing search for the body of that missing boy is one that's preoccupying everybody. Did the state let that child down, do you think, Owen?
It certainly looks like that. Like, obviously, there's not a huge amount of information in the public domain. There's an ongoing guard investigation, and therefore there are cautions that have to be set around that. But I was very struck by Niall Muldoon, the Children's Ombudsman, last night. I thought his interview with Sarah McInerney was very powerful, because what he was saying is this is now the second case within about a year of the death of a child, and we still don't have in place proper independent mechanisms with strong statutory powers to ensure that where such a death occurs, there is a mechanism to have a proper look back to ensure all the relevant state agencies
but,
that might engage with
the
that
resources,
child.
But are they there? Because I heard the head of Thusley yesterday talking about, you know, there could be 32,000 interventions, you know, of lesser or greater degree.
The issue is this. When a child dies, and the number of these cases are more than there should be, but they are small in number. When a child dies, particularly a child that has engagement with Thusley or other state agencies, there has to be an independent mechanism with powers of compellability to look back and see, did the state in all of its areas do everything that they could to prevent that death? And if it didn't, how do we change the system to ensure no other child dies as a consequence of state failure? And therefore, I think what the government needs to do is action that commitment that's in the programme for government,
Robert, that the
Children's Ombudsman said spoke about yesterday, but do it as a matter of urgency. We have waited far too long for this to happen, and we need to make sure that whatever happened in this instance, every measure is undertaken to ensure it happens to no other child again
Robert
into the
Troy.
Future.
We look at it. Like as a parent of two young kids myself, I find it deeply distressing that a young child could go missing and literally fall off the face of the earth and is unknown, and there's a search ongoing today. I think it's a really worrying state. I think the Gardaí have to be allowed to carry out their investigation, and when that investigation is complete, it's only then we will know if there was actual failure on behalf of the state or on behalf of Thusley.
No, but I mean, there was a failure in the sense that the child wasn't missed by anybody.
That is...
Having been in the care of Thusley, having been actually in care for a year, I think it was.
But also, the Children's Ombudsman's point is very important, because Robert is absolutely right. The guards have a really important role to do, and none of us should do anything that interferes with that. But Niall Muldoon is making it very clear that it is not the case that we should have to wait until after an independent guard investigation takes place. There has to be a mechanism that is available in the immediate that allows an independent state agency with real powers and the ability to publish reports independently to look at that issue in parallel, because these children do not have time to wait if they are in similarly vulnerable positions.
There is the National Review Panel. I accept it's not on a statutory basis, but it is independent in nature. It's an independent chair, an independent panel, and it can publish a report which is independent.
Only with the permission of Thusley, and it has no powers of compellability.
It's not fit for purpose, Robert. There is a programme for government commitment, and I accept you were right that we need to expedite and prioritise that implementation of that commitment.
The fact that the two children have disappeared in this state when we are at the stage of exhuming places in Tuam to look at what happened to other children, I would actually question, have we learned any lessons from the way, you know, the more vulnerable members of society are looked after, in this case, children. The two could actually, as you said, fall off the face of the earth, and that they're until now.
What is fascinating about this is that the intervention came from social protection, first of all. And that's the way this came to light. Quite accidentally, Pat.
And you would be concerned, are there any other children out there that something similar has happened to? Obviously, this is an active guard investigation. Both cases are active guard investigations. But if we can't look after the vulnerable and just even keep tabs on the vulnerable to make sure they're safe,
and
we have problems.
Just one small point, which is what we do know in relation to this case is that a Tuzla file had been opened and then closed. And there is a question mark around what happens when a Tuzla case file is closed in terms of any periodic check-ins to ensure.
Well, particularly for those, does close mean close? That's the question. If it is closed, it should be closed. Because people who've got their act together, they don't want Tuzla necessarily knocking on their door, making inquiries,
but when we're talking about
revisiting old sores.
But when we're talking about vulnerable children, there is an argument to say, particularly for those cases that were closed during COVID, when there was an inadequate level of provision, there's also going to need to be a look back on some of those to ensure no other child falls through the cracks.
Yes. Well, and especially over COVID, when there was no schools.
The interests of the child have to be put at the centre of this and above and beyond
everything else. By the way, Tuzla said COVID really had nothing to do with it. They said that yesterday.
But that's not what the families of vulnerable children will tell you.
The interest of the child has to be paramount. I agree with Owen on that. Just to say that Minister Foley has requested Tuzla to have a well-being check of all closed files that were closed during that COVID period to make sure that everything is in order. But Pat is right. Like, I mean, if a family has been going through Tuzla from a welfare perspective or a protection perspective and they have got over their issues and the file is closed, that needs to be able to be
part.
We have to have certainty.
What kind of closure should there be? Should it be a kind of a caveated closure? But look, we have to.
If there's ongoing concern, then the file shouldn't be closed in the first instance.
We have to leave it there. Robert Troy, Minister of State for Financial Services, Credit Unions and Insurance, Fianna Fáil TD for Longford West Meath, Ona Brin, spokesperson on Housing, Local Government and Heritage for Sinn Féin, TD for Dublin Midwest, and Dr. Jennifer Kavanagh, Law Lecturer with the South East Technological University. Thank you, one and all. And that's.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.